It's time to pull up a chair and open your Bible for today's Bible study segment of Naomi's Table. Gather around and let's begin.
Welcome back to Naomi's Table. We are now going into our Bible study segment, and our teacher, Connie Stanfill, is here. Hello, Connie.
Oh, hello.
Welcome back to the table. We are so excited because we are now going to be studying Chapter 3 of Habakkuk, verses 3 through 9, and this one is titled Powerful Deeds, and I'm very excited for this one today.
Oh, excellent. Well, it's going to be fun to dive into these scriptures because Habakkuk the prophet is remembering all those incredibly wonderful, powerful, miraculous things God did in the history of the children of Israel. So it's a good memory or good thing to hold on to. So I'm going to read the section first, and then we're going to go back through and kind of talk about what the references are. It's beautiful poetry, but until you kind of have a background or think about these place names and what might be happening, it's a little harder to understand exactly what Habakkuk's talking about. So here we are in chapter 3, verse 3. God came from Teman, and the Holy One came from Mount Paran. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from his hand, and there he veiled his power. Before him went pestilence, and plague followed at his heels. He stood and measured the earth. As he looked and shook the nations, then the eternal mountains were scattered. The everlasting hills sank low. His were the everlasting ways. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, and the curtains of the land in Midian did tremble. Was your wrath against the rivers, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers, or your indignation against the sea, when you rode on your horses on your chariot of salvation? You stripped the sheath from your bow, calling for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. Okay, so we're taking just a chunk of the mighty deeds of God, but I'm going to go back through and we're going to remind you of passages in the Old Testament, where these came from, or, you know, maybe you've already recognized some of them. Actually, though, as we read through this, you could see that it's a beautiful metaphor. And we talk about rays flashing and splendor. Either you could be thinking of a sunrise, glorious coming, you know, the sun coming up and just that bright light coming. Or perhaps even more appropriately would be the thunder and lightning and the storm cloud that surrounded Mount Sinai when the Lord came and gave the Ten Commandments to the children of Israel. Going back to verse 3, it says, God came from Teman, and the Holy One came from Mount Paran, and really seems to be in reference to the time that Israel spent in the during the Exodus in the wilderness for about 40 years, and so that's the area to the south, and so it's kind of the dry, deserty area, and so we're already starting to think, okay, this is probably having to do with the Exodus of Israel. And then it talks about his splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And here we're really talking about the glory of the Lord, that Shekinah glory. Remember, the Lord went before his people with a pillar of fire, I think, by night, and a cloud during the day. And so they could see God's presence. And then even more so when we come to Mount Sinai, when he came and gave the Ten Commandments and through Moses, and just that there was an earthquake and there was thunder and peals of thunder and lightning, and just it was a terrifying sight. And so it's, again, it's a manifestation, small manifestation of what our God looked like. So verse 4 says, his brightness was like the light, rays flashed from his hand, and there he veiled his power. And so if we look to Exodus 19, verse 16, I'm just going to read part of it, and you're going to see there's a resemblance, and this is probably really what Habakkuk is referring to. Exodus 19, 16 says, on the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled. Then Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. And as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him in thunder. So again, it's a remembrance of that time when God spoke to his people and gave them his word, the Ten Commandments, and the instructions to Moses. And so it's a demonstration again of God's mighty, mighty power. Going on then, verse 5 says, before him went pestilence, and plague followed at his heels. And when you think about plague, most of us might remember back to the 10 plagues that Egypt endured when they would not let the children of Israel go. And so that's probably a good bit of what Habakkuk is referring to there. And in the study notes, there's a reference to those plagues, which are in Exodus 7, through Exodus 10 or 11 or so. But I'm just going to read the first part of the initial plague that the Lord put on Egypt. And that was having to do with the Nile River, which was their source of life because the river overflowed its banks and then they could grow their crops. And it was very important to them. So here in Exodus 7:17, God says, "Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn into blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, and the Nile will stink, and the Egyptians will go weary of drinking water from the Nile." And so that's how God initiated the first plague against the Egyptians. Also, though, when God talks about plagues and pestilence, he also promised the Israelites that if they forsook him, if they worshiped other gods like they had been doing, he would bring those same kind of plagues on them. And so Deuteronomy 32, 23 to 24 is where Moses warns the children of Israel to follow God because otherwise he will bring curses on them. And this is part of what it says in that chapter. It says, "And I will heap disasters upon them. I will spend my arrows on them. They shall be wasted with hunger and devoured by plague and poisonous pestilence. I will send the teeth of beasts against them with the venom of things that crawl in the dust." And so our God holds true to his word. There's blessing for those who love him and follow him and trust him, and curses and disaster for those who choose not to. And so that's just an important thing to remember. Next, in our passage here, we're going to find out that the words are really very visual and imagery for earthquakes. And again, earthquakes were a sign of God's judgment and definitely a sign of his power. And so here I am in Habakkuk 3, verse 6. It says, "He stood and measured the earth. He looked and shook the nations. Then the eternal mountains were scattered. The everlasting hills sank low." And so when you think about it, when there's a mighty earthquake and everything shifts and moves and the mountains are disappearing, it does make man feel small in relation to that incredible power. And so it's just a remembrance again of God and his mighty power. And several places in Psalms and in Jeremiah, we see the same thing where Psalm 18:7 says, "Then the earth reeled and rocked, the foundations also the mountains trembled and quaked because he was angry." Jeremiah 10:10 says, "But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God and the everlasting King. At his wrath, the earth quakes and the nations cannot endure his indignation." And so, yes, the mountains are shaking and they're obeying the will of their creator. But actually, there's an imagery of this God acts amongst the peoples of the earth and will accomplish his will. And so there is justice and there will be a fitting end to human sinfulness. And so that's what Habakkuk is remembering again. And then verse 7 goes on and kind of solidifies that for us, because Habakkuk writes, "I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction. The curtains of the land of Midian did tremble." And so again, we're talking about places to the south, places the children of Israel had been near when they were during their 40 years in the wilderness in the Exodus. And the tent dwellers there were afraid of this covenant God of Yahweh because of what he had done already for the children of Israel. I won't read the reference, but also when we think about even when the children of Israel were first going to enter the promised land and they were going to, Jericho was going to be the first city they were going to, there was one person there in Jericho named Rahab, a prostitute, incredibly, who had heard of this God, this Lord, and that's why she helped hide the spies and took care of them. And she said, "And when you come, remember me, because we know I've heard of your God, and he is the one God, and he's powerful. He can do these things." And so that's a neat way of how God worked in somebody who was not one of the children of Israel. Going on then, we're going to see how God had power over the river and sea, the waters. And then actually in verse 8 here, it's kind of a rhetorical question. It says, "Was your wrath against the rivers, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers, or your indignation against the sea when you rode on your horses on your chariot of salvation?" And really, the way the Hebrew is constructed, it means, no, you weren't angry at the rivers and sea. You were angry at men who upon the earth had chosen to disobey you. And then again, when we think about river and sea, it makes us think of Exodus in chapters 14 and 15, where God parted the Red Sea. The children of Israel walked across safely on dry land. But when the Egyptians chose to follow them, that's when God let the water fall back and the entire army was destroyed. Also, again, we find in Joshua, something similar happened at the Jericho River. As soon as the priests put their feet in the water and the floodwaters, actually the Jordan River, I'm sorry, was at flood stage at that time, it was held up. And the children, again, walked through on dry land. And then once the priests left the water, back the river flow to normal. And so this God, this creator God, this God who saves us is the one who he can do his will in nature. And so he does. That's a cool thing. So as we kind of go through this and we saw just how God's incredible power is, there's one more verse in Habakkuk I'm going to read, and then I'm going to explain it. It says, you strip the sheath from your bow, calling for many arrows. And it's really, we don't know exactly what the Hebrew means because it's kind of a little figure of speech. But the idea probably has something to do with God shooting arrows and accomplishing his purposes again against the people of the world who are opposed to him, who have rebelled and have sinned. And so here in this first part of the God's Mighty Deeds, we're again finding out how this God accomplishes his will, and truly how he acted in nature and how he acts in people's lives shows that he is all-powerful.
Mm-hmm. Connie, thank you so much. And I know we're going to be talking more about this in the next segment, but if you're looking for the notes for this, it's titled Powerful Deeds, and it's from Habakkuk chapter 3, verses 3 through 9. I recommend that you go and download those so you can do your own study and answer the questions. Well, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back.